it's time for our weekly look at the top news in national politics.
The House passed a bill aimed at funding operations at the U.S.-Mexico border after a week of reports detailing poor conditions at migrant detention facilities. The first round of Democratic presidential debates kicks off tonight, and former special counsel Robert Mueller will testify in front of Congress next month.
Our question for you this week is, what are you curious to hear from Robert Mueller in his public testimony? What do you want lawmakers to ask? Do you think it's still worth having the private counsel testify in front of Congress about his reports? Let us know at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas at WPR.org.
Ginger Gibson is a political correspondent for Reuters. Ginger, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks for having me again.
So let's first take a look at the border aid bill. This is a $4.5 billion bill that was passed in the House yesterday. Can you break down what this money is intended for?
That's right. This was funding that has been passed through the House and now through the Senate in order to provide aid for the southern border. So this would be everything from some security along the wall, along the border, as well as the facilities that are being used to house migrants. It is a spending measure that provides more for migrants and less of the enforcement funding that the administration had asked for, which is something that Republicans are not so happy about, and really neither are Democrats at this point.
And the House passed the bill yesterday, as we just said. Let's take a quick listen to House Speaker Nancy Pelosi speaking before the vote.
Today, our legislation is a vote against the cruel attitude toward children of this administration. This bill does not fund the administration's failed mass detention policy. Instead, it funds effective, humane alternatives to detention that have a proven record of success. It secures, this legislation secures, limits on how the money is spent and how the administration treats children.
Can you break down some of what the limits Pelosi is mentioning are?
That's right. Pelosi doesn't want the money to be used to pay for these facilities that are housing children. We've seen horrific accounts of what conditions these children are being held in, places where the lights are on all day, 24 hours, that are dirty, children who are sick and not being tended to, children in very bad health. Instead, Pelosi wants these children reunified with their parents or other family members, responsible adults who are in the United States, wants a system that's able to process these people. And that also means releasing their parents or responsible adults from detention centers where adults are being housed. It's meant to try to up the reunifications instead of continuing to fund these detention facilities.
And correct me if I'm wrong, there's also some caveats in the bill as we have it now that could limit contracts with these facilities if they don't get, these facilities in working order within a certain time frame. Is that correct?
That's right. They want to put pressure on the administration because they're using contractors. So these aren't government facilities. These are private, essentially private operated facilities by private companies who are operating with contracts with the U.S. government. They want pressure on them to improve the conditions, to make them something that doesn't look like a children's prison, essentially, and to care for these children that there's no other way to reunify them.
Pelosi had to do some negotiating with the progressive wing of her own party to make sure that this bill would pass. What were some of the demands that she was encountering during this process?
That's right. Democrats in her party, particularly the more liberal part of her party, wanted her to put more of their demands on there. Everything from sort of defunding ICE, the Customs Enforcement, the folks who are out rounding up people or have threatened to go out and round up migrants who are at risk of deportation, and more measures to sort of scale back some of those efforts, as well as efforts to keep President Trump from building a wall on the southern border, a measure that he has tried to circumvent Congress by using emergency declarations and emergency funds. A lot of these things were difficult to do. Without funding getting passed, they were at risk of having other problems. And Pelosi urged the more liberal parts of her party to sort of make their demands ones that she thought could be reconciled. With the Senate passing the bill, we know that the Speaker called the President today. They had a 15-minute conversation, according to senior Democratic sources, and that was done to try to urge them to find some way. I mean, it's important to remember the Speaker is a pragmatist. She knows she has to get something done, and it might not please the most liberal parts of her party, but she's got to get it signed off, as she did and will, for a compromise out of the Senate and by the President.
Which Democrats specifically voted against the bill? Because it wasn't really a slam dunk for Pelosi.
It wasn't, and I wish I could give you a list, but I don't have that at my fingertips to give you the names of the Democrats who voted against it. But it wasn't a slam dunk. I mean, Pelosi is an expert at getting bills through. She got almost no Republican support. There was an aggressive effort to whip this legislation and ensure that they did have the votes before moving forward. And because they're going to have to come up with a compromise bill between the House and the Senate and something that the president will sign, she'll have to do this again. So she'll be operating in very thin margins.
Now, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, has had his own opinions on this bill. The Senate has its own emergency border aid bill. And as you just mentioned, you know, we're going to be going through this again with Speaker Pelosi. How do you think that this might shake out in Congress?
You know, this is the House and the Senate, having passed different versions of the bill, are going to have to decide if they're going to reconcile the legislation. It's a formal process that has them sort of sit down and iron out and come to a compromise bill. They also are looking at a vacation next week, recess. They don't like to use the word vacation, but they're not in town next week. So there's a big question as whether or not they can get some type of compromise struck by the end of the week, or they'll all head home on Friday without having reached that resolution.
So we'll be watching in the next, not this upcoming week, but certainly following for an update on this. We are talking to Ginger Gibson right now. She's the political correspondent for Reuters, and she's with us to talk about the biggest news in national politics. Now, yesterday, sort of sticking in this same vein, John Sanders, the acting commissioner of the Customs and Border Patrol Agency, resigned. Why is he leaving his post?
He announced that he was leaving his post, and this comes at a very tumultuous time for his agency. As we talked about, lots of criticism of his organization that the way that these children are being treated at the border. And this is really a moment that has been a lot of crisis. The president has said that he is not happy with these conditions, although his parting message to those in his agency was that he thought that he had done everything he could to, quote, unequivocally say that he helped support the amazing men and women of the agency. He was in an acting role. He had not been approved in this role. And this is really another example of folks in this Trump administration who are put into these acting roles and don't stick around long enough before there's some type of controversy or issue or clash with the White House that they then leave.
Yeah, that seems to have been a pretty consistent thing throughout the last 2 years, that we do see people in these roles and acting ways and then having to move out. And can you talk a little bit about Mark Morgan, who will likely be the person, he's been sort of tapped to become the next acting commissioner of CPB?
That's right. Mark Morgan will now replace the interim, another interim for an interim, at least for the time being. Really increasing sort of the disarray that we see going on inside this agency, an agency that the president had been really critical of coming in. We know that Mark Morgan is taking over and will be the acting commissioner of the agency going forward.
You know, Mark Morgan worked with the Obama administration previously. He's been a big proponent of the Trump administration. How might he work with this current Congress, given his long background at the border?
That's right. Because he has been in this agency for a while, because he's been involved in Washington for a good amount of time, there is at least maybe some hope that he will be able to make some outreach to Democrats on the Hill, that he'll be able to bring some people into maybe some more moderate measures, or at least to calm some of the very vocal criticism that we've seen of the president coming out of the Hill. This is going to be a very difficult task for anyone who would be going forward. The Democrats have been quite critical of the president and his immigration policies, and it would be quite hard to find anyone that would be able to quell those.
We're talking with Ginger Gibson, political correspondent for Reuters, about this week's national political news.
And you can join in at 800-642-1234. We're going to be talking about special counsel Robert Mueller planning to testify in front of Congress next month. And we're looking for your thoughts. What will you be watching for? Do you think his testimony about the Russia investigation is important to hear, or is it retreading old ground? What do you want lawmakers to ask Mueller? Call in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas at WPR.org.
We'll continue this conversation after a short break. Stay with us here on Central Time.
You're listening to Central Time. I'm Chris Molina.
And I'm Jay Carlisle Larson. Right now, we're picking up the conversation with Ginger Gibson, political correspondent at Reuters. And we're talking about the latest political news in the U.S. Now, right before the break, we started talking about the fact that former special counsel Robert Mueller has agreed to honor a congressional subpoena and testify in front of the House Judiciary and Intelligence Committees on July 17th, even though he previously said he doesn't want to speak publicly about the two-year investigation at all anymore. Why did these committees decide to issue this subpoena?
These committees have been weighing for a long time how to handle Mueller and how to move forward with trying to get him to come before their committees to answer questions. Many felt that the report, while voluminous and long and including lots of detail, was short on conclusions from those details. And they wanted to hear Mueller explain either what conclusions weren't included in the report or some reason for not giving those conclusions. They tried to negotiate. They tried to come up with some way to avoid a subpoena. They moved forward with the subpoena, likely because they knew that Mueller would abide by a subpoena. He's a private citizen. There is no executive privilege. There is no grounds, it would seem, for him to avoid a subpoena. So it's sort of one of those, like, oh, I throw my hands up. I'm going to do what you want me to do now that you've made me do it.
You know, Mueller isn't one to stray from the script. He basically said, I'll talk about the report. It's about 400 pages, but that's about it. Given that, what are Democrats hoping to gain from having him testify?
Most people haven't read the report. I've read all 400 pages of the report.
Well,
probably a handful of your listeners have read all 400 pages of the report, but most people haven't. And so what they really want is to have a moment where there are cameras on and there are lights and there are people paying attention, where everyone who didn't read 400 pages of the report can hear someone explain it in a soundbite that might be able to be replayed over and over again on the news or in a maybe political ad when the president's running for re-election next year.
So there's some long game, it sounds like, with this that we can speculate about, but we're not entirely sure. We had a caller call in. Dave in Lancaster had this to say. The investigation wrapped up shortly after William Barr became attorney general. Can someone in Congress ask whether Mueller was pressured to put out his report then? Is there some speculation to that end?
There's been speculation to that. Those of us in Washington suspect that he had been wrapping up. He was determined to move very quickly. If we look at previous special investigations, he moved faster than most, if not all of them had in the past, especially given how many witnesses he interviewed. But I have no doubt your listener will find that that question gets asked by someone during his testimony. There has been lots of speculation about that. And that might be something that Mueller is willing to put to bed one way or another, since it's a little bit more of an operational question, even if it's outside the scope of what's actually inside the report.
So the two representatives that wanted to ultimately did subpoena Robert Mueller. We have Adam Schiff and Gerald Nadler. These are both Democrats on two committees. Those are the Judiciary Committee and the Intelligence Committee. They, you know, both of these committees are bipartisan. What can we expect to hear from Republicans once he testifies?
That's right. These are bipartisan committees. There will be almost as many Republicans asking questions of Mueller as there are Democrats. We've seen Republicans take a couple of different tacks. During the Michael Cohen testimony, there was just an effort to impeach and sort of badmouth Cohen to try to better help the president. I would expect Republicans to try that as well, undermine the things that Robert Mueller has said. And they may also try, we've seen a line of criticism from Republicans that Mueller's investigation never should have happened, that the FBI never should have begun looking into the Trump campaign. And I think we're going to hear a lot of that from Republicans, trying to get Mueller to say something that they think will justify that criticism for them.
There are about 80 House members that currently back the idea of impeachment. Impeachment has been something that's been dogging this investigation for the last 2 years. We've talked about the pragmatist Speaker Pelosi. She is not one of them. Do you think that this testimony could ultimately put more pressure on her to get behind proceedings?
I would say that we are unlikely to see Nancy Pelosi move forward with any type of impeachment proceedings unless she thinks she has the votes to impeach the president. She's a vote counter. At her very core, she's someone who pays attention to how many votes she has. And for her, the political calculation is that if she starts impeachment proceedings and she can't win them, the president will say that he has been vindicated, that it has been proven now that he did nothing wrong. And she's concerned, from what I understand, talking to people who are close to her, that will help the president. It will help the president get reelected. It will hurt Democrats' credibility. And so I think it's going to take a whole lot more than just Robert Mueller testifying to get Pelosi to move forward. It's going to take a big change in public opinion and opinion inside the Congress.
As we wrap up, some more pressing political news. Over the next two nights, 20 of the Democratic candidates will be taking part in the first debate of the 2020 presidential campaign. They've been randomly divided into two groups of 10. You're going to actually be in the debate hall. Who do you think could benefit most from being where they ended up in the drawing?
That's right. I am speaking to you from sunny 100 degrees Miami. It is warm here. There's lots of air conditioning, thank goodness.
Thank goodness, yeah.
I think tonight we're going to see Elizabeth Warren really have the best debate draw. This is an opportunity for her. She's one of the only front runners, top five on the debate stage on tonight's half. And if she can sort of shine tonight, she could end up with the most advantageous draw of all of them.
And can you give us a quick overview about how the candidates actually qualified to be in these debates? Because there are 23 people who are actually in the running.
There are now 25.
25,
we've
added
one this week. They just don't stop coming. Joe Sestak, the former senator from Pennsylvania, announced he's running this week. Candidates had to get 65,000 individual donors to contribute to their campaign or have reached 1% in three polls. So 20 of them qualified. There was a sitting governor, the governor of Montana, who did not qualify. So it was a little tough for some of them to get onto the stage. The next debate, it is sort of the same type of qualifications. However, when they return to the debate stage in September, they will have to have doubled both of those qualifications. So it's going to get harder from here on out.
No one person is going to have a lot of time to talk, given how big these two debates are. How do you expect to see candidates try to stand out?
candidates will try to stand out by fighting with other candidates. If you only get a minute to answer your questions, you can get another minute if somebody criticizes you, and then you get an opportunity to respond. So that's one way. The other way is to have really pre-rehearsed answers, to know what you want to say in that minute. And when I talk to strategists, they say the best way to get some extra time is to not complain about how little time that you have, because that wastes the precious little minutes that are there.
In the last minute that we have, can you give us a very brief overview of the next White House press secretary?
That's right. I'm going to do my best to imitate a presidential candidate and give you a minute answer. Stephanie Grisham is coming to the White House to be the White House press secretary. She was previously the spokeswoman for Melania Trump. Before that, worked for President Trump's 2016 campaign. A bit more combative, maybe, than her predecessor, although her predecessor was plenty combative as well. But we'll be taking the helm, and we'll be seeing a lot more of Stephanie and how maybe she does or doesn't change the relationship that the White House press corps has with the administration.
Ginger, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us today.
Thanks for having me.
Ginger Gibson is a political correspondent for Reuters. She was with us for our weekly look at this week's news out of Washington, D.C. And stay with us later on in the show. We will be talking more about the political debates that begin tonight and carry over into tomorrow. And you'll have your chance to chime in on that conversation as well. And you can join us at Central Time WPR if you want to give us your thoughts on the Robert Mueller testimony that is coming up in a little under a month in Washington, D.C.